Years ago, a little boy died when his appendix ruptured and toxins filled his little body. The medical staff working on the boy miraculously saved his life. And over the ensuing months, the child spoke in his limited way about his experience in heaven for those minutes where his body lay dead on the operating table. The child's father wrote a book on this experience called Heaven is for Real, a book that for many months was on bestsellers lists, and they recently made it into a movie a couple years ago. Heaven is for Real spoke to both believers and non-believers, holding forth the hope that our time on earth is not the only one. And it confirmed for Christians that the afterlife is a true belief and not just something that we're foolishly deluding ourselves about. I think the reason that books like Heaven is for Real are so popular is the same one that the Sadducees came at Jesus with. The idea of an afterlife, of heaven, of physically resurrected dead bodies seems a little illogical at times. Despite the stories recorded in the Gospels of Jesus's life, death, and that he rose, and despite the fact that every Sunday we say in the Nicene Creed, we believe in the resurrection of the body, that doesn't mean that we always buy into this idea wholly and completely without any doubts or reservation. And while many Jews at the time of Jesus did believe in the resurrection, it wasn't some new idea Jesus came up with or his disciples, the Sadducees were part of the Jewish faith that did not believe it. They felt that resurrection was a foreign idea that wasn't found to be scripturally true in the Torah, in the first five books of the Hebrew Bible. And so they approached Jesus with a story concocted to prove just how ridiculous the idea of bodily resurrection is. A man dies, leaving his wife childless, which in that culture meant that she was without honor or security, since she was viewed more as the property of a man and not as her own person. And this new widow then gets passed from brother to brother, each dying, each without having impregnated her. So the question is, at the resurrection, there are seven honorable and valued men and one dishonored woman without worth. To whom does that woman belong? Although the Sadducees' story is pure fiction, it does reveal a lack of compassion, doesn't it, for this hypothetical woman? Who is probably the basis of some real women that they might have known. And it also reveals the sin of privilege. While they don't believe in the afterlife, these privileged men, privileged because in that patriarchal society, men and not women wielded power, especially power over a woman's body. These men cannot imagine an existence that doesn't look like the way their current life is structured. And though it might sound like heaven to the seven men in the story, I cannot imagine that the woman would have believed it paradise to be still linked with any one of these men, to still be cast in the role of powerless and voiceless, same position she experienced in her life. And that's how insidious the sin of privilege is. It exists without those in power even being aware of it. Privilege is the very air we breathe, and it's bound to every moment that as we make our way through the day. Privilege is the unexamined structures that keep our life at the same level of prestige and security, above and separate from those who are beneath us, those upon which our privilege is built. 30 years ago, Peggy McIntosh wrote about the insidiousness of white privilege in a working paper called White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. McIntosh wrote, "I was taught to see racism only in individual acts of meanness, not in invisible systems conferring dominance in my group." This seminal essay shined a light on the minute ways in which our white skin color has of bettering the hours of our days, without us even being aware of it. From the ability to go to Rite Aid and buy a Band-Aid that will more or less match our skin tone, to the policies of redlining, which denied Black Americans mortgages to purchase homes in areas that were saved for white Americans, areas that were more desirable and affluent than those that the red boundary assigned Black Americans to. 500 years after the first enslaved Africans were forcibly brought to our shores, and 156 years after they were finally emancipated, and 11 years after we elected our first Black president, our country is still working not only to unpack the knapsack of white privilege, but we seem to keep finding objects hidden that we never knew were in there in the first place. And we've also discovered that there are many knapsacks of privilege we each carry on our backs. Resources and sustenance for the lives that we live to the detriment of others. Each day of their lives, I've tried to raise my daughters to know that they are valued because of who God created them to be, because of the image of the divine that's stamped upon them, and not valued because of the beauty of their face or the correct size of their body. But every day, my daughters are assaulted with images of women with perfect white skin, thin bodies and various levels of nakedness, and a certain quality of vacantness of thought that is seen as the ideal American woman that's broadcast through Instagram and magazines and on TV and in movies. And they absorb the message that it is their fault if a man cannot control himself around them. Presented with the image of a vulnerable widow passed from one man to another, Jesus gives an unexpected response. Rather than assigning the woman to a man, Jesus gives her back her personhood. In the resurrection life, Jesus says, there is no reason to marry. And if there's no marriage, then there is no one to claim this woman. She is her own. Or rather, she's not only her own, she is God's, God's child, and a child of the resurrection. Whether or not we fully believe in the idea of a bodily resurrection as opposed to a more spiritual one, the point that Jesus wants the Sadducees and us to realize is that the focus shouldn't be on that one final death at the end, or the millions of tiny deaths we die in a world that favors the powerful, the wealthy, the educated, and the elite over those who persist on the vulnerable margins. God is not a God of death or of a past that limits or binds, but rather God is a God of life, the great I am, fully present and fully alive. And God wants us to focus on life as well, both now and the one to come, by living our todays focused on compassion for the other, focused on doing those actions for those who are without voice or privilege, a life of honoring the divine that is in each person, fully created in God's image. Imagine what this sort of resurrection life would be like to the woman in the Sadducees story. What resurrection life could be like for our daughters, for all of God's rainbow-colored children. Imagine a resurrection life where one's worth and value do not depend upon your status or zip code or skin color or gender or sexuality or fertility, but simply on the belovedness of being a child of the resurrection. Imagine what our world would look like now if all of the children of the resurrection lived this way each and every day. Why, it would actually be thy kingdom come.